This is Audible.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
First comes the day, then comes the night. After the darkness shines through the light. The difference, they say, is only made right by the resolving of gray through refined Jedi sight.
Journal of the Whills, 7477.
Penguin Random House Audio presents Star Wars, The Force Awakens by Alan Dean Foster. Screenplay written by Lawrence Kasdan and J.J. Abrams and Michael Arndt. Based on characters created by George Lucas. Read for you by Mark Thompson. Luke Skywalker has vanished. In his absence, the sinister First Order has risen from the ashes of the Empire and will not rest until Skywalker, the last Jedi, has been destroyed. With the support of the Republic, General Leia Organa leads a brave resistance. She is desperate to find her brother Luke and gain his help in restoring peace and justice to the galaxy. Leia has sent her most daring pilot on a secret mission to Jakku, where an old ally has discovered a clue to Luke's whereabouts. Chapter 1. She needed him, and he was nowhere to be found. There was no one else she could rely on. No one like her brother. No one else at all, now that the New Republic stood on the verge of implosion, of destruction, of complete collapse. They had thought that with the fall of the Empire, it would all be so easy. The people would understand the need for patience. That time would be required to rebuild that which the Empire had taken away. Cities, communications, trade, all these could and were well on their way to full restoration. It was the intangibles that proved so much more difficult to re-establish throughout galactic society. Freedom, for example. The freedom to speak one's mind, to object, to dispute. She sighed. Those who had led the rebellion had underestimated the deeply buried desire of far too large a proportion of the population who simply preferred to be told what to do. Much easier it was to follow orders than to think for oneself. So everyone had argued and debated and discussed until it was too late. Pacing the chamber, she caught a glimpse of herself in a length of polished metal. She knew she looked tired. Sometimes she wished she had been born a commoner, an ordinary citizen, instead of planetary royalty. Such thoughts led her inevitably to memories of Alderaan, her home world, now many years gone, reduced to ashes. And her own father had been a party to it. It was a legacy she could not escape. She could not let something like that happen again. To any other world, to any other people. It was her responsibility. And the weight of it was heavy. Too heavy? Easier if she had help. The kind of help only her brother was capable of providing. If he wasn't dead. No, surely not. Wherever he was, if he had passed on, she would have sensed his demise. Of that she was certain. Of that much she had to be certain. There had come a hint, clue. Not much, but better than any report that had found its way to her in some time. She would have followed up on it herself, for who better to search for clues to the location of a missing brother than his own sister? When she had proposed the idea, the shock of objection on the part of her fellow resistance leaders could have been heard halfway across the galaxy. Reluctantly, she had conceded to reason. Someone would go in her stead. The name of a particular pilot had been put forth. His record was no less than remarkable, and she could hardly argue that a pilot scouting solo would draw less attention than a perambulating princess. So she agreed.
Finding one man should not, in the final analysis, be so difficult,
insisted one of her colleagues.
Even on all the known worlds, there are only so many hiding places.
For an ordinary man, yes, she had replied. But we're not trying to find an ordinary man. We're looking for Luke Skywalker. There had been some further argument, especially from other leaders who had remained convinced that the pilot chosen to follow up on the slender lead was too young for such a crucial task. In the end, harmony had triumphed. Once again, she caught her reflection in the metal. It had been some time since she had not prevailed in the course of such discussions. A thin, knowing smile gleamed back at her. No doubt her authority in such matters derived from her shy, retiring nature. The smile faded. No time for sardonic reflection now, she told herself. No time for extended, lengthy discussion. Times were desperate. The ruthless First Order was on the march, threatening to overwhelm the shaky framework of the weak, increasingly vulnerable, and still developing New Republic. Where was her brother?
The Star Destroyer Finalizer was massive and new. It had been forged and assembled in the distant orbital factories of the First Order, constructed in secret and uninfected by the virus that was the New Republic. Its devoted and fanatical builders had designed it to be more powerful, more technologically advanced than anything that had come before it. Certainly there was nothing in the possession of the new resistance that could stand against the vessel. Almost invisible when they first dropped from a port in the side of the immense resurgent-class Star Destroyer, the four transport vessels were of a proven design. Their function straightforward and simple, they had no need of the extensive redesign embraced by their mothership. For all that, the transports still performed their prescribed role with brute efficiency. As they went about their mundane daily tasks below, the inhabitants of the glowing orb known as Jakku had no idea they were about to receive a visit from four elite squadrons of Imperial stormtroopers. On board the quartet of transports, the 80 white-armored troopers prepared for touchdown in the manner of soldiers everywhere. Wisecracks alternated with nervous speculation about what might await them. Surging adrenaline generated nudges and the occasional comradely whack on a neighbor's arm. They knew one another well, had confidence in their team, and felt certain they could cope with anything the minor world toward which they were descending could throw at them. Squad leaders barked commands. Weapons were armed, checked, rechecked. Flame troopers made certain their special weapons were loaded to capacity. Each trooper made a point of inspecting the armor of a neighbor, ensuring that joints were sealed and panels tight. The ensuing silence was replaced by a deep rumbling, motionlessness by jolts and bangs, as the four craft entered Jakku's atmosphere. Someone made a particularly inappropriate comment and was immediately quieted by those seated across from him. After that, the only noise within each transport was the roar and thunder as they bucked their way down through thick air. An automated electronic voice sounded the
"Prepare for landing!"
warning. Armored bodies tensed. There was a single sharp jolt, followed by the return of a silence so thorough it was shocking. Hands tightened on weapons, bodies tensed, and inside the bay, all eyes turned to the transport's bow doorway. The quiet was barely broken by the slightest of mechanical hums as the front of the ship started to lower toward the unseen ground. There were smaller villages on Jakku, more primitive, more rural. No one passing over or even through Tuanal would have suspected that it held a secret. Even if they had, they would have found no reason to linger. The worlds of the galaxy were full of secrets, and there was no reason to suspect Jakku was any different. But this particular secret, it was a peaceful place, as was the case with most small communities situated on desert worlds. Despite the desolation that was apparent at first glance, it boasted its characteristic assortment of indigenous life forms. Regardless of the absence of much in the way of visible vegetation, the distant, isolated hoots and mewlings of nocturnal native animals indicated that life was present even where none could readily be seen. A single wind chime, yodeling in the occasional breeze, provided a tinkling counterpoint to the yelps of hidden sand dwellers. With neither the place nor the motivation to hide, a creature that was decidedly non-native rolled eastward out of the village. Consisting of a rounded head floating above a much larger sphere, it was dull white with striking orange markings. Designated BB-8, the droid was, at the moment, very, very concerned. Where a human would see only empty night sky, advanced calibrated synthetic optics saw a moving point of light. When the light resolved itself into four separate points, the droid commenced an agitated beeping. The phenomenon he was seeing might signify nothing, except the quartet of lights was descending in a controlled manner on what could only be described as a calculated path, and they were rapidly slowing. If they continued in the observed fashion, they would make a controlled touchdown at... BB-8 performed an almost instantaneous calculation. Too near for coincidence. One such light was reason for concern. Four hinted at possibilities dire to contemplate. Beeping and whistling in something approaching cybernetic panic, the droid spun and sped back toward the village. That is, its head spun. Facing all directions simultaneously, the spherical body did not need to turn, only to accelerate. This BB-8 did with alacrity. While it could have transmitted the conclusion it had reached, it did not do so, for fear of any such message being intercepted, possibly by those it feared might be inhabiting the source of the four descending lights. In addition to its motley group of mixed galactic peoples, Tuanal was home to an assortment of used but still valuable machinery. A fair portion of the village population eked out a modest living, modifying and restoring such equipment for resale in larger towns and cities. As the droid sped past, the occasional human or alien worker glanced up from the task at hand. Frowning, amused by the droid's apparently unwarranted haste as it raced through the community, then they returned to their work, shrugging with the appropriate body parts. Machines in various degrees of dismemberment and disarray did not slow BB-8, who dodged effortlessly around and through them. The flocks of bloggins the droid encountered were not so easily avoided. Whereas deconstructed devices tended to sit in one place and not move, bloggins not only wandered where they wished, but regarded whatever patch of land or sand they happened to be occupying at the moment as exclusively theirs, and took raucous exception to interlopers. The bird-like creatures promptly objected to the droid's chosen path. The pecking he ignored, and he could have barreled on straight through them, but the domesticated flocks provided food for a number of the villagers, and their owners would not have been pleased to see them flattened. So BB-8 was forced to dodge and avoid, which he did with skill and patience, beeping and shrieking at the shamble of pseudo-avians in order to clear a non-destructive path. Eventually, the last of the annoying beasts was behind him. Deep within the village, there was far less likelihood of encountering anything domesticated that was worth eating. A biological process he understood from an objective point of view, but for which he could never rouse much empathy. His goal was close, and there was not a nanosecond to lose. Like most of the buildings in Two and All, the residence toward which he was speeding was an odd amalgamation of the contemporary and the very primitive. Dwellings on many of the minor desert worlds were like that. Designs dictated by necessity as well as the environment. Though BB-8's intended destination resembled little more than a primeval hut, it contained electronics and multiple concealed enhancements capable of making living in a harsh, dry climate more than merely tolerable. Though he was fatigued, Poe Dameron tried not to let it show. He owed that much to his host. Besides, he had a reputation to uphold. He had come a long way through difficult and dangerous circumstances to be in this place, in this moment, all on behalf of the Resistance, and specifically on the orders of General Organa herself. He was not about to let a minor inconvenience like exhaustion tarnish a farewelling. His visage, framed by dark, thick waves of hair, was a bit proud of countenance, something that others, not knowing him, might mistake for arrogance. Confident in his skills and in his mission, he sometimes displayed an impatience that arose only from a desire to fulfill the task at hand. His worn-down red and sand-hued flight jacket had been with him as long as he had been in the Resistance, rising through its ranks. From the moment of Poe's arrival, Two and All had struck him as somewhat less than imposing. This was in notable contrast to his host. While Lor San Tekka appeared physically capable of removing the heads from various unthinking carnivores, his manner was more that of a soother, and a professional one at that. One immediately relaxed in his company. Provided one held no inimical intentions toward the hut's owner, of course. Though their visit had been brief, the pilot felt quite confident of his analysis. Coming close, Tekka placed a small leather sack in Poe's open palm, then covered both with his own hand. He smiled softly and nodded.
"These days I can only do so much. Would that I could do so much more."
He sighed heavily.
"And there is so much more that needs to be done. But this will begin to make things right."
As the older man's hand withdrew, Poe tightened his fingers around the leather bag. In size, it was small. In importance, "Legend says this map is unobtainable," Poe noted. "How'd you do it?" The older man just smiled, clearly not willing to give up all his secrets just yet. Poe grinned back at him, accepting it. "I've heard stories about your adventures since I was a kid. It's an honor to meet you. We're grateful."
Tekka shrugged. An old man's shrug, slow and full of meaning.
I've traveled too far and seen too much to ignore the collective anguish that threatens to drown the galaxy in a flood of dark despair. Something must be done, whatever the cost, whatever the danger. Without the Jedi, there can be no balance in the Force, and all will be given over to the dark side.
Though Poe was reasonably secure in his knowledge of such things, he was also intelligent enough to know he could not begin to discuss them in depth with someone like Lor San Tekka. Rather than make a fool of himself by trying to do so, he prepared to take his leave. Besides, he had a delivery to make. Casual philosophical conversation could wait for a better time. "The General has been after this a long time," Poe said as a way of beginning to take his leave. Tekka smiled at some secret thought.
"General, to me, she's royalty."
"Yeah, but don't call her princess," Poe told him. "Not to her face. She doesn't like it anymore. Really doesn't like it."
He was about to elaborate when a frantic metal sphere rolled into the room, barely breaking in time to avoid hitting the two men, and began to spew a stream of electronic chatter. The two men exchanged a glance before rushing toward the building's entrance. Poe had his quadnox in his hands even before he stopped running, aiming them toward the general section of sky indicated by BB-8. He let the integrated automatic tracker focus on any targets in the vicinity. The device located four almost immediately. Lowering it, he spoke without turning, his gaze fixed on the horizon.
"Not to be presumptuous, sir, but you need to hide."
Tekka didn't need quadnox. He had already identified the incoming ships by the sound they made as they finished their descent.
"Not to overstate the obvious, but you need to leave."
Despite the importance of his mission, Poe found himself conflicted. Not only did he respect Lor San Tekka, he liked him. How could he leave him here?
"Sir, if you don't mind, I..."
The older man cut him off.
"But I do mind, Poe Dameron. You spoke of your mission."
Both his gaze and his tone hardened.
"Now fulfill it. Compared to what is stirring in the galaxy, you and I are little more than motes of dust."
Still, Poe demurred.
"With all due respect, some motes are of more importance than others, sir."
"If you wish to flatter something, flatter my memory. Go, now. I must see to the defense of the village."
Turning, Tekka headed off, not looking back. Poe hesitated a moment longer, then whirled and raced toward the far end of the village, BB-8 pacing him effortlessly. As he ran, he was passed by armed, stern-visaged villagers. How the alarm had been raised, he did not know, just as he did not pause to wonder at how or why such seemingly simple folk had come into possession of so many weapons. Doubtless Lor San Tekka would know. Poe resolved to ask him one day. The ship that was parked some distance from the village was well hidden beneath a high rock outcropping. That wouldn't shield the X-Wing from sophisticated search gear, Poe knew. He needed to exit the atmosphere, and fast. Hurrying to the cockpit, as BB-8 rolled into the co-piloting position, he hurriedly activated the controls. Instrumentation flared to life. In the distance, a swarm of bipedal shapes in glistening white armor could be seen approaching the village. Stormtroopers. The weaponry they unleashed confirmed their identification. Those villagers who had armed themselves attempted to mount a defense. In this, bravery was a poor match for training and advanced equipment. As more and more of their number went down, the defenders had no choice but to pull back. It was over almost before it began. Seeing the hopelessness of further resistance, the villagers began to give themselves up.
surrendering in twos and threes. As penned animals panicked and broke free, several of the specially equipped flame troopers began setting chosen structures afire.
To an outraged Poe, there seemed no reason for it. But then to those behind the First Order, sowing fear and terror was merely politics by another means. His angry thoughts were interrupted by a stream of electronic anxiety from the droid.
We're going, BB-8, we're going. Almost there.
He thumbed another control.
Landing lights snapped on as engines whined to life.
Roll clear of the overhang and then punch it, he told himself.
He was a second from doing just that when the ship was hit. The pair of stormtroopers had come up on him unseen. Whoever had planned the attack was too smart to rely on a simple frontal assault. Perhaps these two were part of a preceding suit drop, or had used a vehicle to circle around behind the village. If one of their bursts connected with the cockpit, their origin wouldn't matter. On the other hand, they were either angling for a commendation or just plain stupid, because their line of approach put them right in front of the X-Wing's weapons.
Poe hit the control that deployed the drop-down pivoting gun from the belly of his X-Wing, then fired. The resulting blasts cleared the ground of the enemy, and every other living thing that had been unfortunate enough to have been in their immediate vicinity. Having dealt succinctly with the momentary interruption, Poe returned his attention to the X-Wing's instrumentation. An ascending whine rose from the rear of the ship. Shuddering slightly, it started to move out from beneath the protective rock. Strapped into the pilot seat, Poe flinched in response to the unexpected vibration. There shouldn't be any shuddering. The X-Wing stopped, but the rising whine did not. After quickly shutting down to prevent any further damage to the engines, Poe popped the canopy and climbed out. Moving to the back of the ship, he stared hard at the now inert engines. The two stormtroopers might not have been tactically sophisticated, but they had been good shots. The damage to the engines was severe. BB-8 rolled up beside him. Nothing was said. Nothing needed to be said. Both man and droid could see that they were in big trouble.
In the village, the fight continued, as a die-hard group of its inhabitants, perhaps knowing all too well what the representatives of the First Order had in mind for them if they surrendered, refused to give up their weapons. While the battle was a mismatch, it was not a slaughter. And those villagers who continued to resist gave as good as they got. Shot straight on, a trooper went down in a mass of shattered armor, shredded flesh, and blood. One of his companions immediately rushed to his side and knelt to render assistance. A torn, bloody glove lifted toward the would-be rescuer, shockingly bare fingers protruding from the torn protective covering. Faces behind helmets stared at one another. With a shock, the trooper who had arrived to render aid to his fallen comrade recognized the one whose life was now bleeding out inside his armor. They had trained together, shared meals, stories, experiences together. Now, they were sharing death together. Combat was not at all like the would-be rescuer had envisioned it. A brief, final flailing by the downed trooper splattered the newcomer's face mask with blood. Then hand and arm fell, and movement ceased. There was no assistance to be rendered here, the second trooper realized. Straightening, he surveyed the hell in which he found himself. His weapon hung at his side, unfired. He stumbled off, away from his dead comrade, and that exposed, pale, pleading hand. As madness ebbed and surged around him, he wandered through the village, feeling himself more a participant in a historical drama than in an actual battle. The horrific and all too common red stains on the ground contradicted his denial. This wasn't like his training at all, he told himself numbly.
Unlike in simulations, reality bled. Smoke and dust rose from the devastated buildings around him. His helmet's oral receptors picked up the sounds of distant explosions, as well as those close at hand. Crackling flames did not rise from burning sand. They rose from homes, small workshops, storage buildings. As he turned the still-standing corner of a building, movement caused him to raise his weapon reflexively. Frightened and unarmed, the woman he found himself confronting inhaled sharply and froze. The expression on her face was one the trooper would never forget. It was the look of someone still alive who realizes she's already dead. For an instant, they remained like that, predator and prey, each fully cognizant of their respective status. When he finally lowered the blaster's muzzle, she clearly couldn't believe it. She continued to stare at him for a long moment. What could only be described as a thunderous hiss caused them to turn away from each other. When the trooper turned in the direction of the sound, his movement broke the woman's terrified paralysis. She whirled and fled. The shuttle that was descending was far more imposing than those with which the trooper was familiar. Boasting exceptionally high folding wings and a raptorish silhouette. When the bay door opened, it was to allow a single figure to exit. Tall, dark, cloaked, with its face hidden behind a metal mask. It ignored the still swirling chaos of the battle to head unerringly in the direction of Lor San Tekka. Struck by the new arrival's apparent indifference to the enveloping fray, the trooper was startled when a sharp nudge from behind momentarily threw him off balance. A glance found him locking gazes with a superior. The non-com's voice was curt. "Back to your team! This isn't over yet!" The subject of his ire nodded in recognition and hurried off, wondering what the arrival of that singular figure might portend, but not daring to inquire. For an ordinary trooper like him, ignorance was not simply an abstract value. It was in the manual. At least for now, Poe realized the X-Wing was not flyable. If he could scrounge certain critical components, find a machine-grade cutter, then maybe, just maybe. But first, there was a far more important matter to attend to. From within the leather bag he had received from Tekka, he removed an artifact. Its significance far exceeded its size. After a moment of fumbling with BB-8's exterior, the pilot inserted the artifact into the droid. A confirming beep indicated that it was securely lodged. Satisfied, he stood to eye the glow of the burning village. "Get as far away from here as you can," he ordered his mechanical companion. "Any direction, so long as it's away from this place." When the droid's anxious electronic response indicated it was hesitant to comply with the command, Poe added emphasis to his voice. "Yeah, I'm gonna take out as many of those bucketheads as I can. BB-8, I'll come back for you. Go! Don't worry. It'll be all right. Wherever you end up, I'll find you." BB-8 continued to hesitate, but when the pilot remained indifferent to repeated queries, the droid finally turned and rolled off, accelerating across the sand and away from the village. It looked back only once, its head swiveling around to regard the X-Wing and pilot rapidly fading from view, even as it increased its speed in the opposite direction. Much to BB-8's regret, it could only protest a direct order, not reject it. The tall, hooded figure, whose arrival had so transfixed the shell-shocked trooper,
made his way directly to Lor San Tekka. He did not waver in his course or objective, ignoring startled stormtroopers and armed villagers alike. Seeing him approach, Tekka halted and waited. The village elder recognized who was coming toward him and knew there was no point in running. Resignation slid over him like a cloud. The passenger from the shuttle stared at Tekka, examining him from head to foot, much as one would a relic in a museum. Tekka gazed back evenly. The black mask, with its slitted forehead and thick snout-like breathing apparatus, covered the face of the man he knew as Kylo Ren. Once he had known the face behind the mask. Once he had known the man himself. Now, to San Tekka, only the mask was left. Metal instead of man. Ren spoke first, without hesitation, as if he had anticipated this meeting for some time.
The great soldier of fortune, captured at last.
Though emanating from a human throat, the voice that was distorted by the mask had the sick flavor of the disembodied. Tekka had expected no less.
Whereas something far worse has happened to you.
Words had no effect on the mask, or, so far as Tekka could tell, what lay behind it. There was no reaction, no outrage, only impatience.
You know what I've come for.
I know where you come from.
For all the concern he displayed, Lor San Tekka might as well have been sitting atop a mountain ridge, meditating on the sunset over the Skorak Mountains.
From a time before you called yourself Kylo Ren.
From behind the mask, a growl. Feral, but still human.
Careful. The map to Skywalker. We understand you've acquired it. And now you're going to give it to the First Order.
At the point where he had entered the village, moving cautiously and keeping to what cover was available, Poe could now observe the confrontation. Tekka, he recognized, even from behind and in bad light. The tall, masked visitor was unknown to him. He strained to overhear what they were talking about, but without edging closer and exposing himself to wandering stormtroopers, he could only look on.
You don't belong with them.
Tekka spoke calmly, in matter-of-fact tones, and without any fear, speaking truth to the lie that stood before him, striving to bring light to darkness. The hope was a faint one, but he had to try.
The First Order arose from the dark side. You did not.
Impatience on the part of the visitor gave way to exasperation.
How is it possible that a conversation becomes so tedious so quickly?
A sweep of one long arm encompassed the boundaries of the village.
Don't turn a simple transaction into a tragedy for these people.
A tincture of undiluted sadism stained the voice behind the mask.
Hasn't your presence here done enough for them already?
I made my peace with these folk and this place long ago. As to the other, to turn away from your heritage is the true tragedy.
Ren stiffened ever so slightly as he leaned forward.
Enough witless banter.
He held out a hand.
Old man, give it to me.
From his vantage point nearby, analyzing the movements and gestures of both men, Poe could divine enough to guess what was being discussed, and to envision the eventual, inevitable conclusion.
No,
he muttered under his breath.
No, no, no.
Forgoing any further effort at concealment and disregarding his own safety, he broke from cover and started toward the pair.
You may try,
Tekka responded with quiet defiance.
But you cannot deny the truth that is your family.
Kylo Ren seemed to grow before him. Rage flared behind the mask as reason gave way to fury. A lightsaber appeared in one hand, flaring to life. A barely stable crimson shaft, notable for two smaller projections at the hilt. A killer's weapon, an executioner's fetish of choice.
So true.
Light, refulgent and cutting, ripped across and through the figure of Lor San Tekka. Chapter 2 Poe saw the saber come to life, saw it start to describe its lethal arc. Time seemed to slow as he watched it descend. Thoughts raced through his mind, half-crazed, wholly powerless. He heard himself yelling, sensed himself raising his blaster and firing. Too late, too slow, he told himself despondently, even as he continued to fire. Perceiving the threat, Kylo Ren reacted immediately. A hand rose sharply, palm facing toward the unknown assailant. The gesture was merely the physical manifestation of something infinitely more powerful and entirely unseen. It intercepted the discharge from the pilot's weapon, freezing it in mid-air, as effectively as any solid barrier. From behind the mask, eyes of preternatural intensity tracked the attack to its source. Initially driven by pure rage, Poe now found that he could not move. His heart pounded, his lungs heaved, but his voluntary muscles refused to respond. He was paralyzed as effectively as the blast from his blaster. A pair of stormtroopers took hold of him and dragged him forward until he stood helpless before the impassive Ren. Had they not held on to him, Poe would simply have fallen over. He attempted bravado even so. Who talks first? Poe asked, making his voice light. Do you talk first? Do I talk first? Having deactivated his lightsaber and returned it to his belt, Lor San Tekka's murderer casually scrutinized the prisoner. Poe's nerves twanged as feeling slowly began to return to his arms and legs. Ren's gaze settled on the details of the pilot's clothing.
A resistance pilot, by the looks of him.
He nodded curtly.
Search him. Thoroughly.
One of the troopers who had dragged Poe forward commenced a detailed and none too gentle pat-down. Pulling a small device from his service belt, the other trooper slowly passed it the length of the prisoner's body, beginning at the pilot's head and ending at his feet. The examination did not take long.
Nothing,
declared the first stormtrooper, standing at attention. Poe winked up at the trooper who had used his hands.
Good job.
Forgetting himself for a moment, the goaded trooper kicked the prisoner's legs out from under him. Poe went down hard on his knees, still defiant. The other trooper gestured with the handheld instrument.
Same here, sir. Internally, this one is clean. Nothing but the expected food residue.
He didn't hesitate.
Terminate him?
Kylo Ren did not let his disappointment show. At such times, momentary delays were not unexpected. All would be satisfactorily resolved in good time.
No. Keep him.
A brief pause, then.
Intact and functioning.
Plainly disappointed, the two troopers dragged Poe away. Ren watched them for a moment, contemplating possibilities.
Later, he told himself.
For now, there were other details to attend to. He allowed his thoughts to be briefly diverted, regretting the time that had been wasting in dealing with the necessary inconsequentialities. Awaiting his pleasure, the senior officer in overall charge of the special squadrons drew herself up at his approach, her black cape of rank hanging loose around her. It stood in startling contrast to her armor, which even in the poor light shone like polished silver.
"Your orders, sir?"
she murmured. Kylo Ren surveyed his blazing surroundings. He had already spent too much time here to only partial satisfaction. He disliked such delays.
"Kill them all, Captain Phasma, and search the village. Every building, every possible storage facility and place of concealment. When your troops have razed it to the ground, search the ground. Scanners, perceptors, you know what to look for."
A single nod and she turned. A line of troopers stood before the assembled surviving villagers.
"On my command."
Weapons were raised. The reactions of the villagers were typical. Some stepped forward, insolent to the last. Others fell to their knees. There was whimpering and crying and shouts of defiance. None of it lasted very long.
"Fire!"
It wasn't a massacre. In the lexicon of the First Order, it was nothing more than a prescribed chastisement. Appropriate retribution for harboring a fugitive of note. It was the nature of the tutorial that was important, not the numbers involved. It took less than a minute. When it was over, and the only sounds were methodical chatter among the troopers, mixed with a variety of unholy crackling, they dispersed to carry out a final survey and scan of the debris, inorganic and otherwise. Standing by himself, one trooper, with a bloody face mask, was startled when a hand came down on his shoulder. Though the hand belonged to a comrade, the first trooper did not relax.
"Notice you didn't fire. Blaster jam?"
Automatically, the trooper being questioned nodded in response. His comrade gestured knowingly and clapped him on the shoulder.
"Turn it in when we get back to base. Let the tech boys deal with it and get yourself a new one."
"Thanks. I will."
No sooner had his helpful colleague departed to rejoin his own unit than the trooper found himself gaping at the tall, dark-clad figure striding purposefully toward the singular shuttle that had set down in the midst of battle. Though he willed himself to move, to turn away, he found he could not. He remained rooted in place, clutching his unfired weapon, staring despite himself. And in response, the figure of Kylo Ren turned and looked sideways, directly at the soldier. The trooper saw only light reflecting off a mask, and his own fear. "He knows. He must know. And I'm dead." But he wasn't. The glance lasted barely a second. Then Ren resumed his pace, deep in thought as he strode toward the shuttle. In the course of returning to his ship, he passed a blaster lying on the ground. It was Poe's, the one that had come within an arm's length of killing him. Once he was beyond its reach, he touched it, but not with his hands. It rose, seemingly of its own accord, and flew free, smashing into a nearby structure and scaring the wits out of an idling stormtrooper unfortunate enough to be standing nearby. The purification of the village extended to its outskirts, where a clutch of troopers had just finished searching the damaged X-wing that had been abandoned there. Having done all they could with the tools and equipment at hand, they prepared to return to their units. Specialized gear could have reduced the resistance fighter to its component parts, but that was not how they had been ordered to proceed.
"Nothing there,"
declared the last of the quartet as he descended from the fighter's cockpit.
"The usual resistance trash, that's all. Deep scan shows nothing in the fuselage or elsewhere."
As soon as he was safely out of range, his companions activated the pair of heavy weapons they had brought to bear on the hiding place. A couple of bursts was all it took to reduce both ship and outcropping to rubble. The sound of the exploding X-wing
reverberated across the gravel flats and dunes.
Far away now, a solitary spherical droid looked back, even as it continued to flee.
The fireball that rose into the sky suggested the detonation of something far more volatile than primitive buildings and scrapped mechanicals. If he could have rolled faster, the frightened droid would have done so.
Contrary to much popular thought, desert worlds are not quiet at night.
In the absence of light, an entirely different ecology springs to life.
Moving with greater caution, BB-8 tried not to pause at each howl, every meep, the sounds of clawed feet scraping against bare rock. There were things in the vacant wild regions of underdeveloped planets that would gladly take apart a solitary droid just to see what made it tick. Or roll, he knew.
His internal gyros threatened to send him tumbling wildly at the very thought of such an encounter. Droids such as him were not meant for unpopulated places, and he desperately desired to find others like himself. Or, failing that, even people.
The shackles that Poe had worn on the troop transport were removed as soon as he and his captors disembarked. Aboard the Star Destroyer, there was no reason to physically restrain the prisoner. Apparently enjoying themselves, or perhaps merely impatient to get out of their armor, his escort chivied him along with what he considered to be unnecessary roughness. Not that stormtroopers of any ilk were noted for their individual diplomacy.
Considering whom he had tried to shoot, he knew he ought to consider himself fortunate that they had brought him aboard still attached to all his important appendages. A physical state of being, he knew, that could be altered at any moment.
On the other side of the enormous and impressive receiving bay, other troopers were filing out, grateful that more of their number had not been lost on the expedition, and looking forward to some rest and food. Intent on reliving the battle below, they paid no attention to one of their own, who fell behind.
When he was convinced no one was looking at him, the trooper turned and raced back into the open transport.
He removed his helmet and proceeded to void the contents of his stomach into the nearest refuse receptacle. The terror in his expression was palpable. Fortunately, there was no one there to witness his disgrace.
There was, however, now, someone behind him. Terror gave way to cold fear as he found himself gazing back at Captain Phasma. How much had the senior officer seen? How much did she know?
Too much, as it turned out.
Aloof yet commanding, she indicated the rifle he still carried.
FN-2187. I understand you experienced some difficulty with your weapon. Please be so good as to submit it for inspection by your division's technical team.
Yes, Captain.
How he managed to reply without stammering, he did not know. Instinct as opposed to training, he decided. Self-preservation.
And who gave you permission to remove that helmet?
He swallowed hard.
I'm sorry, Captain.
He could feel her disgust as he struggled to put the helmet back over his head.
Report to my division at once.
Worse, he knew miserably, was likely to come later. It was where technology went to die. Mountains of metal, cliffs of plasticine derivatives, oceans of splayed ceramics were jumbled together in a phantasmagoric industrial badlands that none dared enter for fear of being poisoned, cut, or lost forever. None except a very few, for whom daring was as much a sense as sight or hearing.
One such individual clung insect-like to a dark metal wall pimpled with protruding sensors, manipulators, and other decaying mechanisms.
clad in light protective goggles with green lenses, face mask, gloves, and gray desert clothing, the busy figure was burdened with a substantial backpack. A multifunction staff strapped to her back made precision work in such tight and dangerous quarters difficult. Wielding an assortment of tools, the scavenger was excising an assortment of small devices from one metal wall. One after another, bits of booty found their way into the satchel that hung below the slender figure. When the satchel was full, the scavenger secured it shut and commenced a perilous descent, avoiding sharp projections and threatening gaps in the wall. Arriving at the bottom of the metallic canyon, the figure hefted a piece of larger salvage recovered earlier, and then, laboring under the double load, headed toward a distant slit of sunlight. Outside the metal caverns, and at last clear of danger, the scavenger shoved the goggles up on her forehead and squinted at the blasted surroundings. She was nearly 20, with dark hair, darker eyes, and a hint of something deeper within. There was a freshness about her that the surrounding harsh landscape had failed to eliminate. Anyone glancing at her would have thought her soft. A serious error of judgment. It had been a respectable day's work, enough to ensure she would eat tonight. Pulling a canteen from her belt, she wiped sweat from her face and shook the remaining contents of the container into her upturned mouth. "There should be more," she told herself as she began tapping the side of the canteen. The last few drops sometimes clung stubbornly to the insulated interior. Concluding that she had drained the container of all its contents, she reattached it to her belt facing inward. The satchel and the larger piece of salvage were secured to a piece of sheet metal, which she sent sliding down the mountain of sand in front of her. Off to one side, shade was provided by one engine of a decomposing old-model Star Destroyer. Too big to cut up, its technology obsolete, it had been left to molder on the hillside. In the desert climate, decay would take thousands of years. Being something less than portable, the great hulk of a shell was ignored, while opportunistic scavengers, such as Ray, plundered its interior for saleable components. A second shard of sheet metal served as a sled for the girl to follow the results of the day's labor down the dune slope. Practice allowed her to manipulate the metal skillfully enough so that she neither fell off nor crashed into any of the scattered debris that littered the dune face. At the bottom, she stood and dusted herself off. Her dun-hued garb was desert basic, designed to protect the wearer from the sun and preserve body moisture. It was inexpensive, easily repaired, and unlovely. The same could be said for the clunky, boxy, beat-up speeder parked nearby. If the battered, rusty vehicle had a redeeming feature, it was the over-and-under twin engines. Since one or another tended to flare out and die at any given moment, their utility stemmed more from their redundancy than from any ability to supply speed or maneuverability. After fastening her acquisitions to the transport, she climbed into the driver's seat. For an anxious moment, it seemed as if neither engine would ignite. Then one, and finally the other, roared to life. That was her life, Ray reflected. A succession of anxious moments, interrupted only by the novelty of occasional panic. All part and parcel of trying to survive in a backwater world as harsh and unforgiving as Jakku. Racing along the flat desert floor, she allowed the speeder's perceptors to guide her between endless rows and piles of ruined starcraft, obsolete or fatally damaged military equipment, civilian mechanicals that had outlived their prescribed lifetime, and even long-downed Imperial vessels. No one visited here. No one came to take inventory or write history. In these times, there was no nostalgia for death, especially not for that of machines. Instrumentation blinked, barrier ahead. Too much wreckage through which to maneuver. She knew the spot. Though going over would use more power, at this junction the only alternative was a wide